Courtney Moran, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. Well, there sure are a lot of things going on. And as chairwoman of Women Grow, you have something coming up as well.
We certainly do. The first Thursday of November, we'll be having our monthly signature networking event, and it's going to be Thursday, November 3rd at the Laurelhurst Club on Southeast Ankeny here in Portland from 6 to 9 p.m., and we're having a medical cannabis panel. We've got Dr. Rachel Knox. She is one of the founders of Canna MDs. We have Nurse Rebecca White, who is part of Converse with a Nurse with Panacea. And we also have Professor P from Dynasty Genetics.
Oh, fantastic. And that's coming right up here on November 3rd.
November the 3rd.
Yeah. Where again?
It's going to be at the Laurelhurst Club on Southeast Ankeny. Until next month, I'm Amy Paradotta.
And I'm Ed Melnick, wishing you all the best.
It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dia de los Muertos PDX 2016, Wednesday, November 2nd, from noon to 11 p.m. at Audio Cinema in Portland. This annual celebration of the Day of the Dead honors our loved ones who have passed. There will be altars, music, face painting, food, drinks, and more. Again, that's Dia de los Muertos PDX 2016, Wednesday, November 2nd, from noon to 11 p.m. at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Let Us Grow on Friday, November 4th at Mercy Corps in Portland. Let It Grow celebrates the work of bringing education and the experience of gardening to incarcerated youth and adults in Oregon's correctional facilities. This event features the premiere of the documentary Can You Dig This? And a panel discussion after the film. Again, that's Let Us Grow, a benefit for growing gardens, taking place Friday, November 4th at Mercy Corps, 45 Southwest Ankeny Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs on the KBOO airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio broadcast program in the country. Bread and Roses is a collective of women and non-binary radio activists who give voice to those in global and local spaces working for social justice and equity, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression, too. All this and we have fun. We want our bread and roses, too. Get it? I'm your host tonight, Mason Mimi. And we've got a great show. Our feature story will be on our guest, Gita Lewis, who's a comic book artist based out of Portland. And we also have a short segment about my personal intersectional identities of being Latinx and also being non-binary. That'll just be a short segment with me. So let's get going.
girl is a tomboy. That girl is a tomboy. That girl is a tomboy. Who that is, ho? That girl is a tomboy. That girl is a tomboy. That girl is a tomboy. Who that is, ho? That girl is a tomboy. That girl is a tomboy. That girl is a tomboy. With my little titties and my fat belly, I could tell your man if you finna let me, it's a guarantee that he won't forget me. My body little, my soul is heavy, my little titties be booking city.
So this segment is going to feature myself, Mason Mimi, talking about my intersectional identities of being Latinx and also being non-binary. Being non-binary, for me, I also identify as agender, meaning I just don't have a gender. But non-binary can look and feel and be a lot of different ways for different people. Also, my entire side of my mom's family is Latinx. We're all El Salvadorian. My mom was born and raised in El Salvador until she was six, and they moved up to California. And trying to navigate that has been pretty rough. Because a lot of my family just kind of doesn't get it. And like underneath all those other family issues that come up, there's just like so much to sift through. So trying to explain that I'm actually not a girl and I don't identify as a woman is something that a lot of them just don't get. Even just changing my name, because Mason isn't my birth name. I changed my name over a year ago, and trying to explain that to people has been pretty rough. I've tried to explain it to my aunts first, and they're like, okay. But I also still go by the name Mimi, which is a nickname I've had since I was born, pretty much. And so I just took out my old middle name, and I'm now kind of saying Mimi is my middle name. And so I just tell my family, like, you can call me Mason, or you can just still call me Mimi. And it's just super simple. They don't have to slip up, even though they still do sometimes. But also, it's been particularly weird trying to navigate that with my mom's mom, so my grandma, because she hardly speaks any English, and I hardly speak any Spanish. So there's, like, a huge language barrier because, you know, my mom came when she was pretty young to the United States. And so she kind of had to assimilate, and in a lot of ways that looked like her, even when she was older, not teaching her kids very much about the language. And so a lot of times I would just like learn Spanish and pick up stuff like that either by asking or just by being around my family. And then every time someone from my family who speaks Spanish really fluently, they would like talk to me about it and be like, why don't you speak Spanish? And I'd be like, because I never learned, because no one ever taught me. Which is like has a lot to do with how the culture in America is, in the United States, is very much predominantly white, and how your language, you're supposed to just assimilate into the English language. You're supposed to learn English, and like, there's just so much racism that is like very deeply embedded here, as I'm sure a lot of people know. But for my mom, that looked like her growing up and her not teaching her kids Spanish, even though she was completely fluent in Spanish and fluent in English. And so I would just pick up Spanish whenever I could. And so even today, I'm not fluent in Spanish, and it's something that I really should get on top of, because it does cause a lot of disconnects for me. Especially, like, there's a lot of things like you're not Latinx enough because you don't speak the language, and which is, like, rough for me because I try to figure out, like, how I can navigate that, because I am still Latinx, but I don't speak that language, and I wish I did. But there's also, like, a lot more with the culture. Like I know some of our cultural stuff and, like, cultural foods and drinks and celebrations and stuff like that. But it's also, my culture is very much patriarchal still, and very much binary still, like many, most cultures seem to be, at least the ones that you end up hearing about, I should say that. But there's a lot that goes into my identity, and there's a lot of different intersections, which Bread and Roses is an intersectional feminist show, so this is a perfect segment for this. But yeah, my mom's mom, we have this huge language barrier, so that makes it hard. But she did send me a birthday card last month, and she just addressed it to Mimi, and my last name. So I didn't use my birth first name at all, which was nice because I think my aunts had told her a little bit about it. So she kind of got it, but I don't think any of them quite get the gender part of it. But they're like, okay, the name, that's, you're still using your nickname from when you were a kid, so that's easy enough. And it's also like muddled because I don't have a relationship with my mom. So there's so many layers to it. And then the language itself, Spanish, doesn't afford itself to non-binary identities or anything like that. It's very much like a lot of other languages where where the language is completely gendered, like objects are gendered and stuff like that. And so any type of gender neutral language to refer to a person is very much like the work of people who exist in that identity, who are trying to come up with those terms, like trying to figure out like, what can I do to make it so that this language can have something for me? And so for me, not being fluent in Spanish, that's also harder for me to navigate because I don't know what other people would be using. And it's like a thing that would have to be like made up or like come up with or thought about pretty deeply to have something. So yeah, existing in the intersections of having no gender, but being assigned female at birth and being very much kind of thought of as like someone who's going to take the role of a woman in a family has been hard. We'll try and navigate that with the intersection of my Latinx identity and also being Latinx and white. So there's a lot of layers to that. But yeah, that's just a little bit about that. Next, we're going to go into a segment with our guest, Gita Lewis.
We always welcome new collective members, and if you're interested in joining us as a producer, host, or engineer, no experience necessary, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator, volunteer@kboo.org. You can connect with us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/breadandroses. There you can access our podcasts and share feedback or show ideas. Like us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses, and we are on Twitter at Bread Roses Radio.
You're listening to Bread and Roses, and tonight I'm your host, Mason Mimi, and I'm here with my guest, Gita Lewis. Hi, Gita.
Hello.
Would you like to introduce yourself, Gita?
Hi, I'm Gita Christine Lewis. I am a transgender woman of color. I prefer she and her pronouns, obviously. And I'm an artist, fine artist, portrait artist, comic book artist, writer, singer-songwriter, and curmudgeon. One of my favorite pastimes is poking the bear and seeing what happens next.
Gita's here today to talk a bit about their comics that they've been doing and Intersect Fest, which was about a month ago. So how was Intersect Fest?
It was awesome. It was my first tabling after my first solo tabling after graduating from IPRC. And I had my graduation comic for sale and had no idea how I'd do, whether people would be interested or not. And to my surprise, I sold out. I sold half of them. My first print run of 20 comics, I sold half of them on the first day, and then a friend sold the other half on the second day. So I was really excited, and it's encouraged me to do a second edition. So in December, I'll be publishing issue number 2 of Divergent Tales. More comics about basically QT Puck featured characters.
Nice. Do you want to talk a bit more about the IPRC program? How was that for you? Was it like a year-long program? Or?
Yes. I was in the Comics and Graphic Novel Certificate Program, and IPRC, which if anybody is left in Portland doesn't know what that is, it's the Independent Publishing Resource Center. And I was very fortunate to get the one scholarship for the program. I applied and it looked good, like I was going to get in, but I knew I could not afford to do it. But I took a chance. I said, what the heck? And then, to my surprise, I got the scholarship. And so then it was like, oh, dang, now I have to actually show up and do the work. And it was a challenge because, you know, life happened. And it's still happening. So, I made it through and got to have some really good experiences and learned an awful lot about one of my greatest passions, which is comics. So, I guess that sort of is an extension of what hooked me with comics from the very beginning. When I was a little kid, I was born in the 50s. And so way, way back in the day when newspapers were huge, you could probably paper a bedroom wall with like one Sunday edition of the Funnies. And I could lay down on the Sunday Funnies and not touch the floor. They were that big. Newspapers were huge. And I would copy the comics intently on whatever paper I could find, which my mom started keeping paper so I wouldn't write on the backs of envelopes and bills and stuff. Because, you know, it just wasn't a thing that you kept blank pieces of paper around the house. So, yeah, I would do that, and it kept me busy for hours. And so when I got older, say about 7 or 8, and I got my hands on newsprint, which is what they gave you for math homework, I would do my math homework and draw, and And I would draw on the math homework, and it would be so elaborate that my teacher could not decipher where the math homework was.
Mm-hmm.
And so she threw me under the bus. She turned me into the principal and said, you know, this kid's not doing their homework and blah, 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 and I just can't stand it. And so you know, there I am in the office with the principal and the teacher, and they're just going to read me the riot act, and the principal's staring at the homework, and he's looking at like a week's worth of homework, and he says, I think you owe this person an apology, Miss So-and-so. And she's like, what? And not only did they do the homework, but they got all the answers correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so then she looks and she says, well, I can't handle this. This is just too much. And so they bribe me. They offer me a case of newsprint and enrolled me into art classes with the promise that I would not make life so hard for my teacher and never draw my homework again. So I was like, deal. And that's where my training really started at about 7 or 8 years old. Star Trek happened when I was about 10. Yeah. I had a crush on Mr. Spock and Lieutenant Uhura, which was fun for me. It's still confusing, but, you know, I wasn't trying to figure it out. I was like, wow, mm-hmm. Ooh, this feels good. And then by the time I was 12, I published my first comic book.
Oh, wow.
As a school project.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold all of those. Back then, I used something called a mimeograph machine, which is only people who were at least 50 years old will even know what I'm talking about. This is a machine that was the precursor to photocopiers, where mm-hmm. you had to use a stencil and draw and write in reverse.
Oh, wow.
And it used some kind of chemical dye thing with ammonia. It was stunk to high heaven. That's how tests and other kinds of things were mass-produced way, way back in the day. And my teacher gave me a stack of Mimeo stencil paper and said, if you want to make a comic, go at it. So I had to draw backwards, write and letter the comic backwards, and then get it right and print it. And I nailed it on the first edition. It was about 20 pages, and I even included fake ads. and it was an incredible feat. And then I hand-colored them. I had color pencils, and I hand-colored each page of my 20 copies or so and sold them all at 10 cents a piece. So that was a big deal. And my comics interest just kept going from there.
Mm-hmm.
I started collecting comics at about 11. And comics were full of all kinds of garbage, really.
Yeah.
They were racist and sexist, and I mean, they were every kind of wrong. I think comics even invented new ways to be wrong. But I would just take those comics and rewrite them, mm-hmm. redraw them, rewrite them. And so one of my guilty pleasures back in the day was romance comics. I really loved the idea of romance. And I already had a crush on two Star Trek characters. And I was like, what am I doing with all this sexual frustration? I don't know. Yeah, so one particular story that stuck out in a romance comic was about this so-called tomboy of a girl who knew how to fix cars and was handy and all this kind of stuff. And there was this big question mark. What is she really about and why can't she get a boyfriend?
Mm.
And I was like, in my neighborhood, there were all kinds of people. It was a very diverse part of the city where I grew up. in New England. And so there were gay people, there were transvestites, transgender possibly, I don't know. I was a kid. I just saw different kinds of people, and it was no big deal. The adults didn't make a big deal out of it, so I didn't make a big deal out of it. And getting to know people, particularly gay, lesbian people in the neighborhood, just as regular folk, seeing them with partners and hanging out, doing regular stuff, it didn't make any sense to me that this girl in this comic book, this tomboy, had to have a man.
Mm-hmm.
So I just rewrote that story where she found someone who loved her and that was a woman, and they lived happily ever after with as much knowledge of what happily ever after looked like from that perspective. And I would do that with a lot of other comics. Some superhero, but I really like the anthologies, the science fiction anthology comics, because they were about, like Star Trek, they were veiled allegories about racism and sexism and all this other stuff, you know. So they were blue people, and the blue people hated the orange people, and somehow they made peace and got along together and all that kind of stuff. And so I retreated into a world of more of a fantasy world as a kid, and Star Trek fit that, and science fiction fit that, and comics fit that. So that's pretty much where my head went.
Mm-hmm.
Flash forward to high school, and I did a senior project where I interviewed a bunch of professional cartoonists. I came up with this whole project and pitched it to a committee that included several teacher advisors and the high school principal, and got $100 worth of funding, which in 1970s was a pile of money, to travel and to publish my findings. I went to an alternative high school, and that was encouraged. You could actually come up with your own curriculum for what you wanted to be when you grew up. and gear your education towards that. So mine was art, and particularly comics, and I got to take advantage of the fact that living in New England meant that people like the cartoonists that did High and Lois, Beetle Bailey, and several other comics that were syndicated comic strips, they lived in Connecticut, where I grew up. And so I got to go to their house or go to meet them at the library or something like that, and take the bus and do all these other long-term adventures around the state. And one of the coolest things I did as part of that project was to visit the now defunct Charlton, I forget how you say it, comic publishing company, which was actually inside a bowling alley. So I got to meet the publisher, the editor, several of the artists that were dropping off work at the time. Some of them went on to be really famous artists with other big comics companies like Marvel and DC. And they all had great advice for me and were very generous with their time. And it was just more incentive for me to follow the comics thing. I still needed to finish some kind of higher education. I finally settled on an art school in Boston and graduated. In the senior year, I found out about another art school that was completely devoted to comics by one of my comic book heroes, a real famous icon of an illustrator and writer named Joe Kubert. And but I was like, oh crap, why didn't I know about this? So anyway, I bit the bullet and got a job at a national magazine and then just started living my grown-up life.
Mm-hmm.
Comics were still kind of a part of it, but it was more about commercial art. And this was still pre-computer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was a lot of cut and paste and wax and spit and gum and all that kind of jazz. And then life took many more detours because that's how life is. I had a lot of jobs. I was a food inspector. I was a graphic designer. I was a quality control expert for Nabisco at one point. I've had a bunch of jobs, but I've always pursued art, and fine art was another passion, so I focused on portraiture. But comics were still calling me from my childhood. And when I got the chance to actually devote time to studying comics at IPRC, I jumped all over it. And now it's again at the forefront of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And but my world has expanded. I came out as trans. I'm a trans woman. About 3 years ago, mm-hmm. finally came to that realization for myself. And there are parts of my life that seem more challenging, but overall, I've never been happier in my skin.
Mm-hmm.
There's still lots of other stuff to just... The world just doesn't want you to be you,
mm-hmm.
no matter who you are. If it doesn't fit that gender normative, yada, yada, yada. So, but overall, this is the best thing for me. And telling the kinds of stories I want to tell now in comics, my life informs that.
Mm-hmm.
And the lives of people that I've met and throughout this new journey informs that. So when I was compiling the stories and making up this first comic, I wanted to do, again, things that reflected my worldview. So I started off with... that the characters have to, the main characters, the featured characters, have to be QT Puck.
Mm-hmm.
That's important to me. So that doesn't exclude other people. It just means that that QT Puck characters are at the center of the story. They aren't just the anecdotal characters. They aren't the sidekick. They aren't,
mm-hmm.
they aren't, you know, an add-on to fill a demographic. It's about those kinds of stories. There's that.
And, like, just for some clarification for any listeners, if you don't know, QT POC meaning queer and trans people of color, just in case people don't know that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping they do, but...
I hope so, too. But, yeah, you're right. So I started to think about a children's book several months ago, and talked about it, I guess, with the right kinds of people. And the next thing I know, I'm getting hooked up with a local publisher, and then I have to do a book. It's like, you know, it goes from just talking about it, thinking about it out loud to, uh-oh, I've told too many people. And they're all saying, yeah, do that. And it's like, okay, here's what you need to do. And the next thing you know, I'm like, I was on a roll getting this book together. And I thought about the kind of book that I wanted. I wanted a book that was the kind of book I wish I had when I was a kid. So... that meant that it had to be a book about a queer or trans, definitely trans, girl of color. And I wanted to focus on what that's like, just to be those things, and mostly the girl part.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like just to be a kid, just to be a girl kid? And it was like very, very liberating for me to just actually think about it and how I wanted that to work. And it was a struggle in terms of getting just the right words, because I wanted it to be kind of like Dr. Seuss, you know, a rhyming book. But I didn't want it to be a cheesy rhyming book that was like wannabe Dr. Seuss. So I really put my wordsmith hat on and really kind of considered, okay, what's crossing the line, what's not, what's a little too much here and not enough there. Took a little poking. And the drawing part, which normally is what falls right out of my fingertips, became a struggle because life happened again. And my life became a struggle. I had what I thought was a great job, and I moved into an arts building. That was really cool, and the rent was amazing, the people there. And then I lost my job. The same weekend that I moved in, I lost my job. So I went from everything's working to, oh my God. And then I filed for unemployment, and it took weeks upon weeks. And some of the problem with unemployment finally kicking in had to do with me not being very tech savvy. And I'll own a piece of that. But then there was a whole lot of extra layers of bureaucracy that they just put out there to encourage people to not use an unemployment benefit that they worked for and earned. So it dragged on for over 2 months of delays, which was not my fault. That was adjudication and paperwork and questions, because they didn't understand my interest in art and my interest in caregiving, and why I didn't just take any job anywhere. And also, at the time, I was enrolled in IPRC, which, you know, then it was like, well, we never approved the school. I was going to school before this happened. You expect me to quit? And I tried to explain to them that if I quit, then that causes even more problems, because I'm on a scholarship, which I may have to pay back if I quit. So, but, I mean, they weren't having it. Anyway, on top of that, I was nearly evicted because I was not getting unemployment and I was not working. So, you know, it was hard. It made it almost impossible to do the book. I would give it a shot and nothing was coming out right. And so I'd leave it alone, because I know that much about me, that if I'm doing something I'm passionate about and I want it to come out well, I need to give it time. So unfortunately, that was last spring. And now here it is, fall, more than 6 months later. And the book isn't quite done. It's done and it's not done. I've done a lot of artwork on it. I've been going back and forth on how to present it in terms of publishing it and what needs to be in color. And I mean, there are lots of technical issues. And because I've got a background in publishing, I'm pickier. So, you know, there's a lot of things that just probably, you know, the typical person who's used to a vanity press would have just said, oh, great, I'm in print. And that would have been it. And they would have said yes and just whatever. Most of those people are writers. And so they don't have the extra layer of evaluating the art and how the art and the text work together. And there's other choices when you're doing a picture book. But it is going to be out at the end of the month. And can't really go into a whole lot of details. I will tell you that it will be available on Amazon. There is an ISBN already, so it is a real thing. and that my publisher will be very happy to hear, because I haven't talked to her in a while. How you doing, Suzanne? So, yeah, it'll be really cool to finally see. I actually pre-sold a couple of copies. People were so enthusiastic about the children's book when I was talking about it at Intersect Fest that they said, well, I'll buy one right now. And I'm like, okay. I brought some order forms, but I didn't expect anyone to fill them out. So I was like, okay, this is really real now. So,
That's super cool, too.
It is. It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm excited about it. I was working on it just last night, as a matter of fact. I was finishing up one of the last little bits that had to be redone. And I was like, this is really a thing now. And pretty exciting.
If you're tuning in, this is Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.
I suppose the book, which is called Who is Callie Mitchell, just goes into describing who this girl, Callie Mitchell, is. And she's a whole bunch of fun things, like most kids. You know, she likes to cook and tell stories and just do all of these things. And it goes on and on for several pages of just silly drawings of her doing fun things. And then right near the end is when the big reveal comes in. And let's see if I can remember how I wrote it. It's funny. I'm trying to remember what I wrote. let's see. She's not the boy you thought you knew. She's not a boy at all. She's Callie Mitchell. She's a girl. She's Southern, and she's tall. And that's like the last page. So for 20 some odd pages, you get to see that she's a fun person and a good friend and a sister, and she likes to bake and she loves science and she's a nerd. And, I mean, she's all of these other things. And then there's the trans piece at the end. It's like, and oh yeah, she's trans too. Yeah. Big whoop.
Yeah.
You know? So, after rereading it, you know, sitting back and looking at the sketches and rereading it a few times, like, okay, I think I nailed this one. I hope other people like it, but I'm pretty happy with the way it came out. So I'm excited to see it finally in print. And it is actually a coloring book, and activities are in the back, which sort of dovetail nicely into the same kind of thought process that went into making the book, where I just list a bunch of questions. What is your favorite thing to do? What do you like? Where do you spend your time? Do you, you know, just really the kind of simple interrogative things that you would do with anyone, anywhere. But I also throw in, so what's different about you? And what's the same about you and other kids? So that it opens a door for having those discussions about who you think you are and who you feel you are and how do you own your world and how do you fit in the skin you're in right now? And I'm hoping that that's something that kids and their parents or guardians or friends can all sort of look at those questions and look at the book and have fun with it together.
Yeah, I know. I would definitely like to get a copy. I work at a daycare center with 3 to 5 year olds.
Oh,
so I feel like it'd be cool. So fun to like bring in and have the kids like look through. And don't know how the coloring part would go, because if they all want to color at the same time, it would get kind of messy. But they could all just do it at the same time. But I feel like that'd be so fun, and like at the same time supporting like trans women of color very directly.
Oh, yes. Like
in the work that they're doing. So I think that'd be great.
Yeah. Now, when I was researching the book, because I actually did do some research, I wanted to make sure that it was the kind of thing that would fit in a place like a daycare center or a library or a school. And, you know, so I was asking questions. Someone suggested that maybe I could even get it sponsored so that I could distribute it to daycare centers. So, like, your place of work would get not one copy, but, you know, 20 or 30. So that everyone would have one to color and to explore and to have fun with and take home. I'm very much about access and accessibility of art and all kinds of things, really, but particularly art. So I don't know much about the suggested retail on the book. It's probably going to come out somewhere around $10, which seems kind of steep. Not that I'm trying to unsell my book, but I would certainly entertain any arts organizations that would want to help subsidize a book and make it something that's much more available to particularly people of color who don't have $10 for coloring books. Sorry.
Yeah.
Even a really awesome coloring book that would probably be very supportive for their gender nonconforming kid or a kid who just has friends who are gender nonconforming and want to have fun with that. So, but yeah, so I've been looking at different organizations, trans organizations, other kinds of organizations that are LGBTQ focused. So, yeah. My goodness. I do want to do a little shout out.
Yeah.
To the Q Center, for one. I am a volunteer at the Q Center. You know, I've taken a bit of a break from all of the stuff that I normally would be doing there at the Q Center. Just to kind of regroup from my struggle over the last several months. And I think I'm in a more stable place now. I am employed. Woo! part-time, but it should be enough to cover the bills, which is important. And so that's where this new energy is coming from, to just finish the book, get out, publish two more comic books, and really kind of finish the year on a high note. My involvement with the Q Center is really important. When I showed up, when I finally moved closer to Portland, I was living in one of the outlier bedroom communities, a very annoying place, not very supportive. And I came along at a point when the Q Center was just a blink away from winking out of existence. And I went to one of the town halls and I was like, you guys can't close now. I just got here.
Yeah.
No. So
was that when you had like first moved to Portland, or
I had been living in Oregon in gee whiz, it's going on 10 years now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I came here in 2006, crashed on somebody's couch, and it stuck. So I knew about the Q Center, and I would try to make a trip every few months just to come up randomly and see what was going on. I knew that, still not clear about me, but I knew something was up with me, and I knew that the Q Center was a part of me helping to figure that out. So when I finally got a chance to spend more time at the Q Center, that's when the center was in crisis. And I just, you know, I said, no, you can't quit. You know, I don't know anybody. I don't have any connections. I'm not rich. I don't have any money. But I have sweat equity. And And they took me to task on that. And the next thing you know, I'm volunteering for this and I'm doing that thing. And I'm like, oh, my God, I really stepped in at that time. And it's been one of the most exciting experiences since I moved to Oregon. And that was, oh, my gosh, almost 2 years ago that I became a volunteer. So it's been a long time. And we're coming up on a gala.
Is it like a fundraiser gala or like just a celebration gala?
It's both. Mm-hmm. It's a fundraiser and a celebration. Last year it was quite a party because, you know, it was the first full-on celebration of the Q Center not closing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like, whoa, how about that? And so this one I think is like, I would probably call it something closer to a victory lap.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole nother year of rebuilding relationships. And because, I mean, quite frankly, when the Q Center was about to close, not a whole lot of people were upset about it,
mm-hmm.
Which is sad.
Mm-hmm.
There were really damaged relationships, and that took a lot of mending. It took a lot of fixing and a lot of undoing and a lot of, no, this is a whole new animal, all new people. We're here to make sure that it stays, because the Q Center is really important to a large number of people in the mm-hmm. LGBTQ community, and a lot of people who weren't involved in all of that, who just used the services, like me,
mm-hmm.
We're not having it. We don't have a lot of money, but we got to find a way to keep the Q Center. The idea of the Q Center, the very building, and more than the building, the things that go on inside it,
mm-hmm.
They nurture and support who we are, and they make a difference for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
My focus on inclusion and accessibility, and that goes intersectionally into more people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Q Center was not known as a place for people of color necessarily. That's changed radically.
Mm-hmm.
Q Center is now the home of Sankofa, which is what the PFLAG Portland Black Chapter transitioned into.
Mm-hmm.
It is also the home for the Eki Center, which is a trans and queer healthcare center. So there's a lot of things that people probably never would have thought the Q Center would get involved in.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a whole new Q, and it's, I can't say enough positive stuff about it. So,
and it's up in Northeast Portland, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's 4115 North Mississippi.
Mm.
It's the same building if you've been around for more than a couple of 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know where it was until, mm-hmm. you know, many years after I moved to Oregon. But yeah, it's right up there, and great things are happening there. And they've been very supportive of my arts, just in terms of the community. And I love it. I really love the Q Center. I can't just gush enough about it. So stop me before I start a whole new love letter.
Okay, thank you so much for coming, doing this interview, Gita. It's really great. I can't wait to see the book and your new comic in December, because they're both coming out in December, right? Or predicted to.
The children's book is going to be out in about a week. It's going to be out right around Halloween.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why I was thinking December.
Yeah. The comic book, the second edition of Divergent Tales, is going to be out first week of December, as well as the new comic I'm doing, Trans Romance, which is chock-a-block full of transgender romance stories. more realistic because not every love story ends well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Do you have like an artist page or an artist website?
Yes, actually. Let's see now. Oh my gosh, I'm like the barber with bad hair. I didn't bring the information with me. But yeah, if you go to Facebook and you go to Gita Lewis or Gita's Comics, you'll find chock-a-block full of QT-POC comics, samples of my work, and upcoming issues of the new comics. And I also have Gita's Studio, which is my fine art page. And I'm still working on my web pages. Mm-hmm. Because, again, not very technically adroit with computers. So that's taken forever. I get frustrated and say the heck with it for like a couple of months at a time.
Yeah.
But maybe when I start selling more comics, I can pay somebody because I don't want to ask anybody to do stuff for free. That's screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But I do have a presence on Facebook. And from there, you can find all my other goodies.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you, Gita.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You have been listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland. Thank you so much for listening. Many thanks again to our engineer and our evening public affairs director, Lisa Loving.
Tengo todo, papi, tengo fly, tengo body, tengo una sabesura. Tengo todo, papi, tengo todo, papi, tengo fly, tengo body, tengo una sabesura. Tengo todo, papi, tengo todo, papi, tengo fly, tengo body, tengo una sabesura. Tengo todo, papi, tengo todo, papi, tengo fly, tengo body, tengo una sabesura.
This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Anthony V and The Born, Fire Band with Cool John Cool, Speaker Minds, MC Mike Crenshaw, and more on Friday, November 4th at the Hawthorne Theater in Portland. Anthony B. grew up in Northwest Jamaica. He tours extensively all over the world. and is known for fiery high-energy performances. Again, that's Anthony B. and the Bourne Fire Band with Cool Johnny Cool, Speaker Minds, and MC Mike Crenshaw on Friday, November 4th at the Hawthorne Theater in Portland. More information can be found at kvu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.